Welcome to Stone Cold Stros. I'm Brandon Strange with Charlie Polillo and Josh Jordan. You can find them on X at Polillo and at Josh Jordan 975. And in between episodes of our show here, you can read their blogs covering all things Houston sports over on our flagship website, sportsmap.com. On today's episode, we have our first significant injury update from spring. One Astros starter has a new weapon, but mum's the word. One Astros infielder is looking to increase his larceny, and I'm not talking about whiskey. And Cam Smith is all the buzz. We discuss the realities of him breaking into this lineup this season. Gents, the biggest update coming out of spring training is the most concerning. Christian Walker scratched with left oblique soreness. Disappointingly, given the nature of oblique injuries and Walker's recent history, there's a good shot we start the season with one of the new bright spots on this team watching from the bench. In fairness, catcher and first base are two positions in which the Astros are fortunate to have depth. But given Walker's age and history with this exact injury, what's your concern level with Walker going forward?
Concerns, the right word, right? They're saying soreness as opposed to a strain. Then again, it's an Astros medical update. So major surgery could have happened already for all we know. But you mentioned the track record. Christian Walker missed basically a month last season because of a left oblique strain. Go back to 2021. He had two separate stints on the injured list because of right oblique injuries. So, yeah, he's at least baseball middle-aged, a little bit older. The Astros' history with acquiring a middle-aged or older first baseman just in time for his career to go completely down to crapper. But soreness different from strain. But the antennae absolutely up, because if it turns out to be a strain, it's not a day-to-day. It's more like you're looking month to 6 weeks. Because if you rush back from an oblique, you're more likely to aggravate the problem, which is exactly what happened to Walker back in 2021. Right? This was the big acquisition, biggest acquisition, without question, of the offseason. Offense, defense, leadership, some postseason pedigree. The loss of Christian Walker, while not flat out devastating, would be massive.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big deal, because he missed the entire month of August last year because of this same injury. So it makes you wonder, is it lingering a little bit? And when he did return, he only hit 231 for the remainder of the season. So maybe it was still kind of bothering him. And then you get here into March, and then maybe it was still there. It's just all the time off. It felt pretty good until he started, you know, playing a couple weeks and letting it fly, which is a real shame, because he was having a hot start to spring, hitting 500 with three doubles, only eight at bats. But, you know, it's a small sample size, but he was looking good. I was really excited about what he could do. You know, you mentioned Brandon having other options with Singleton. Singleton's kind of on the other side. He's 2-for-17, hitting 118 this spring. So as great as he's looked physically, I know it's spring training, but we can only go off what they've been doing. He hasn't gotten off to a hot start. And this, it just reminds me, this is the Jim Crane kind of way. You want to pay an older guy on a shorter contract. That's the way he prefers to do it. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I look back at, you know, the Michael Brantley contract, that first 2-year deal they gave him in 2019 and 2020. It was for $32 million. That really worked out for the Astros. He was good for those 2 years, but then they extended him as he got older, and then the injury started being a problem. He wasn't nearly as effective after that. You know, you look at the Justin Verlander contract. They traded for him when he was 34 years old, and you saw a lot of great stuff with Verlander. Won a couple Cy Youngs, won a couple championships, but you also have all the time that Verlander missed with injury, and then you have last year where he was fighting injury and poor performance, where he didn't even make the postseason roster. So this is kind of what you have to deal with. You know, I don't want to bring up Abreu, but we know about all that. So this is the dice. You got to roll the dice with these things, and it's either poor performance where guys fall off, or sometimes injuries, that it's a big factor when you get into your mid-40s. Walker will be 34 years old at the end of this month.
We've ticked under 3 weeks on the calendar now to opening day. So time is growing of the essence. If need be, coverage for a week, or two. That's enough to think about going into the season. Brandon, you do allude to they have what would set up as a natural platoon if Singleton is going to make the roster. His numbers were credible against right-handed pitching. He's a complete joke, should never, ever be in the lineup against left-handed pitching. You have Victor Caratini, who, while a switch hitter, isn't so good that you'd say, well, just give him the first baseman job. So Caratini against lefties, Singleton against righties. Zach DeCenzo could be another possibility, presuming he is making the team. And oil up a first base glove for Cam Smith. Add that to his outfield and third base glove collection.
Hold that thought. We saw both Yordan and Altuve miss time in 2023 with oblique strains. You mentioned it, Charlie. Obliques are tricky injuries that can cost you a month at a time. We're all holding our breath here to see how it works out. Just a quick message. If you're interested in advertising your service or product on this show, you can contact our friends over on the sales team at houston.sportsmap.com/advertise. The link is also in our description. Now, one of the things that came out of this week was the Foul Territory podcast had a bunch of Astros on their show as they were broadcasting from spring training. We'll highlight some of the more interesting bits that came from those conversations. We'll start with Spencer Arrighetti. He reveals that he's working on a new pitch. He's playing it close to the chest, not divulging what that new pitch is, but feels it's going to be substantive for him. Now, obviously, he needs to execute that pitch consistently in a high level for this to mean anything. But how big is this in the short term and long term if Spencer Arrighetti could turn himself into a solid number three or four option in this rotation?
It's not an ironclad solid source. Have you ever seen Bugs Bunny pitch? Hey, Spencer Arrighetti, you know, a little bit of concern for me with don't be a jack of all trades, master of none. He already has, what, a five-pitch arsenal? Now, if it's something, change of a grip of an existing pitch or something brand new, and it's a devastating weapon, awesome. Arrighetti was largely before and after All-Star break, Spencer Arrighetti last season. 3.18 ERA post-All-Star break. Don't be messing around with anything that detracts from that. That would play just fine. He was an innings eater, struck out 171 batters, I think, the most of any rookie pitcher, real rookie pitcher in the major leagues. I mean, he'll go into this season the number four spot in the rotation. But as a younger guy, I don't think it's at all beyond the pale to suggest he could be a better pitcher than Ronel Blanco, who was a 30-year-old, wow, out of nowhere guy. Is Blanco going to continue as that guy? Or does the league catch up to him a little bit? Whereas Arrighetti in his mid-20s could be ascendant. And for 2025, right, if you have four real solid starters, you're a contender, regardless of what questions you may have in your outfield and your bullpen. And then beyond 2025, if the presumptive opening day starter is no longer an Astro, 2025 opening day starter, Framber Valdez, you're looking at really wanting Arrighetti to be a number three, if not higher, come 2026.
It was interesting. Arrighetti talked about what finally kind of clicked for him last year. And he said it wasn't as much the analytics and worrying about that stuff. For him, it was more just focusing on his start. He said he got a little too wrapped up in trying to impress other players and coaches, throwing in his bullpens, doing his side work in between his starts, trying to impress everybody every time he went out there and threw when he was just, you know, throwing a bullpen and working on his pitches, live batting practices, that type of thing. He said when he just really focused about, okay, that's where I need it to be when he was throwing on the side in between starts. Let's just stop and shut it down. That's where I want it. When he stopped worrying about what other people were thinking then and just worried about his starts, that's when he really things started to come together for him. So I thought that was really interesting. The other thing he mentioned was how he was impressed with how much success Hunter Brown had when he started working in that two-seamer, and that he hadn't really had that kind of success with the two-seamer the way that you know Hunter Brown had, and that he wished that worked for him. So I started thinking, like, what would be that other pitch? You know, I went to his Baseball Savant page. You know, as Charlie mentioned, it was, you know, basically those four pitches, the four seamer, the curveball, the cutter, the sweeper, and the changeup. And then I dug a little deeper. It looks like he threw a sinker 10 times last year, only 10. He threw a slider 3 times last year. So if he is just kind of working on it, like, you know, just a different way to hold one of those pitches, then sure. But he said nobody had seen this. Like, none of the other guys on the team had he shown it to so far this time in camp. So if we're just going by pitches he hasn't thrown, I doubt he's coming out there with a knuckleball or a screwball. So if it's a brand new pitch, my guess is it's a splitter. And if you could add a splitter to what Spencer Arrighetti has already in his arsenal, that could be a pretty devastating pitch.
I mentioned long-term implications of Spencer being a solid three or four. That certainly could help alleviate losing a guy like Fromber, which we're under the assumption that there's a very low likelihood that this team will retain him. So it's going to be interesting to see how Spencer comes along in his development and what he can become, because this team could use a good pitcher that's under team control for the next several years. Now, also coming from those foul territory interviews, Dave Clark and Mauricio Dubon said that there's a bet on the table right now on whether Jeremy Pena will steal 50 bases. Now, for reference, Pena stole 20 last season, but the interview with Clark made it seem like Pena wasn't really given the green light too much last year. What are your thoughts on that topic? And even if it's not 50, what are the implications of Pena drastically increasing his bag stolen this season?
My first thought is, where's my bookie? Bet the under. Three full seasons as a major leaguer, Jeremy Pena, 44 stolen bases combined across the three. Now, he did notably improve in 2024. He stole 20, was caught just six times after, frankly, being an embarrassingly poor base stealer in 2023 for his raw speed. Stole 13, was caught nine times. So if that game's developed a little polish along with increased emphasis on the running game, a year deeper with the larger bases, hence a little bit shorter distance. But you know what? Jeremy Pena needs to figure out how to steal first more often. Get on base. You can't steal second or third if you don't get to first. And his on-base percentage for his career is a lousy 307. It was 308 in 2024. So I would much rather see his walk numbers jump significantly than the stolen base numbers. Of course, there's a little bit of an if A, then B. If he can get that on-base percentage to even 330, 50 stolen bases seems ambitious, but going from 20 to 35 or 40, conceivable.
I think part of it, he's got to replace the Kyle Tucker factor. Kyle Tucker was a guy that could go steal you a bag. I mean, they even talked about it. Clark was saying once he gave Tucker the time, if it was the right time for him to be able to steal the bag off the pitcher, he was just gone. It was usually on that first pitch. So if they give the green light here to Pena, I think he might be able to do it. They asked Espada, they were like 50, and Espada's like, no, I think maybe more like 30 is the real number. But Clark and Pena seem like they think it's going to happen, that he can do it. His speed, his sprint speed is 98th percentile. I mean, it is elite. So he has the tools, but yeah, you got to get on first base to do it. Charlie mentioned, I'd like to see him walk more. Well, we're 10 at bats in spring training. He hasn't walked once, but you know what he has done? He's got five hits in those 10 at bats. He's hitting 500 and he's already hit a home run. And I noticed that home run, he crushed it to center field. And you know, if we remember Pena, that's kind of where, you know, that Seattle playoff game, the home run to center field. He's had a lot of big homers to center. If he can recapture that power and lift the ball this year, that's a huge first step in Pena getting the offense going, trying to pick up some of that slack from Kyle Tucker. And yeah, he is your fastest guy. So I'd like to see him try. If he can take that bag, go for it. But you got to get on base. I don't think the walks are coming though, Charlie. It doesn't seem like that's in his profile at this point in his career.
Oh, I'm totally a seeing is believing on that. He went backwards substantially in 2024. Drew, I believe, 43 walks. Not a good number, but a whopping number for Pena. Last season, 25 walks. The regular season basically is 26 weeks, 6 months. Walking under once per week for a middling power guy with an okay but nothing special batting average, that's how you have a 307 on base percentage. And that's why you hit sixth or lower. Right, if Jeremy Pena has an okay on base percentage, well, then you can have that leadoff or batting second as a table setter type argument. But with 307 on base percentage, down toward the bottom, buddy boy.
I thought it was interesting that Espada was asked, who's going to take up the slack for leadership with the team now with Bregman gone and Verlander gone and all these guys? First name on offense he mentioned was Pena. That he thinks Pena is going to be stepping up in that leadership role with Bregman out of the building. And then when they asked for pitching, they asked Arrighetti and some of the other guys, they think Hunter Brown is going to be the leader for the pitching staff, which makes a lot of sense. If we do think Fromber Valdez is leaving after this year, then it feels like Hunter Brown's going to be your ace. So I think it's a good thing if Hunter Brown and Pena are kind of already starting to step up as the future leaders of this club.
Well, I agree with you, Charlie. The increase in stolen bases will probably be tied to an increase in on-base percentage. I also wonder how many of those red lights were tied to the relative rarity of him being on base, not wanting to wipe out a positive. And regarding Pena being a more vocal leader, Josh, I'm fine with that. I would also love to see him lead by example as well, not just vocally. Now, obviously, Cam Smith has been the talk of spring for Houston. Early returns are positive, but as is all prospect and Grapefruit League performances, giant grains of salt accompany it. We had comments in our last video to the effect of, this guy has to make this team. Now, I don't think anyone who follows this stuff closely expects them to rush Smith to the big club, but it is interesting that Dave Clark revealed that they are working with Smith in the outfield. Now, if Cam continues his offensive production in Corpus or Sugar Land, how much of a chance do you give Smith being a dark horse for maybe that right field position, considering it's less of a domino effect versus having to, if you try to pencil him in at third, then there's the Paredes has to move to second thing. It just seems kind of a more natural way to include him in this lineup in right. What do you give those odds, Charlie?
Off the top, I'm generally a never say never guy, but Cam Smith's not making his team coming out of spring training. An amazing start. Over 11 plate appearances, the two home runs in one game, the bases clearing triple in another, also a shot to dead center field. That's very exciting to see straight on an oppo power, four walks, but 11 plate appearances. Talk about grains of salt. That was a couple specks worth of salt. So he'd probably go into Double A Corpus, but if he tears it up, he should be a candidate to jump right to the major leagues. All kinds of guys skip over Triple A, but it's a matter of where is the failure at the big league level. If Chaz McCormick stinks, he can't remain a primary right fielder. And I would not bet aggressively on McCormick and Gamel being some dynamic right field platoon for the Astros. So if there's failure there and you think Cam Smith can play credible right field, the throwing arm won't be a question with him. If it's to be third base, it's because whoever is getting the time at second among Dubon, Brendan Rodgers, somehow Luis Guillorme makes the team. If Zach DiCenzo is getting a few starts there, and they're thinking, this combo platter does not taste very well. Paredes to second, Cam Smith to third. But it's going to take A, failing at the big league level at second base or in right field, coupled with Cam Smith going off at Double A.
What it tells me is that I think they really do see him as more of an outfielder, because why would Dana Brown entertain trading for Arenado? That's a 3-year contract. You want to block Cam Smith for 3 years at third base, knowing what he's capable of? And even before he kind of went off this spring, that you knew how much they love Cam Smith. He was the main piece of that trade that they wanted. So it makes me think that they're going to work him in the outfield. I can't see any other logic that makes sense that's going to be his role. Now, he's come out and said he prefers third base, but, you know, who knows? That it's not like he's Devers where he can call his shot a little bit more. He's a minor league player. I will say this. Cam Smith played 5 games in Double A last year. 5. So it's not like he has much experience there. But, I mean, the Astros are thin. Dana Brown has said within the next 18 months he thinks he could be up with the big league club. So maybe it's a deal where they really work on him in the outfield a lot this season, maybe all of spring training next year, he's working in the outfield, and perhaps he's your starting right fielder in 2026.
If Cam Smith is to be special, that it would take 18 months is ridiculous. That's basically the end of next season. He'll be 23 and a half by then. We've covered before. If you're special, you're in the major leagues at 22 or younger, a very high percentage at the time, much less to get George Springer. And yeah, we're going to let the stew simmer and simmer and simmer and simmer and just cut time unnecessarily off the guy's big league career. Another reason they won't want him up from the jump, along with just a real lack of minor league experience still, is to delay the clock on at least Super 2 arbitration eligibility. I would think, unless it's a dire emergency, June at the very earliest on Cam Smith. But at least now they have the prospect in the organization, you can think about this type of stuff without getting laughed at.
Yeah. And on position, this does go back to his Prospect Profile, which said that while he's played infield exclusively, his size and range, or maybe lack thereof in range, did project him out to possibly be a right fielder in his career. So it's not unrealistic that that could be where he's headed for, regardless of how things play out in the infield. Now, on the topics of guys Houston would love to see take a step forward, KPRC Houston's Ariel Alexander was on X making the case that Jake Meyers is more of a major league worthy player than Houston fans give him credit for, pointing that Meyers' defense offsets the lack of offense and that he's a two war player at center field. But even still, he ranks 19th of 31 at that position. So he's still bottom half in center. Now, it's apples to oranges in some ways, but we were disappointed Houston didn't sign, or at least some of us were disappointed Houston didn't sign Anthony Santander. But Santander is a 2.9 war player at his position. So even with the power you get from him, the low on-base percentage and the lack of defense nets out to just one win higher than Meyers at their respective positions. So it raises this question for me. Is the problem with Meyers more of unfair expectations given what we saw from him in his performances in AAA and what he did in the bigs prior to that shoulder injury?
No. If you're a major league regular with an OPS of 660, you're not good. There also is the train of thought that defensive metrics, while the evolution has been significant, they're still not as measurable as offensive metrics. Example, who was a better player last season, Jeremy Peña or Jose Altuve? Jose Altuve, another all-star team, adding another chapter to a Hall of Fame career. Jeremy Peña stuck in neutral offensively. Well, by war, baseball reference war, Jeremy Peña was decisively better than Jose Altuve. Now, we know Altuve's defense is, but was Jeremy Peña clearly a better big leaguer than Jose Altuve last season? I would question that. Alex Bregman was also clearly a better player last season than Jose Altuve by war. War is a good stat. It's not a be-all, end-all stat. And a 1.7 war, which was Meyers' actual baseball reference war. There's baseball reference war and Fangraphs war, and you can pick and choose. But war is win above replacement. So if you're 1.7 wins above replacement, that's 1.7 wins above basically taking a guy out of AAA and giving him your job. A 1.7 war major leaguer who played in 148 games is not a good player. Now, there's a difference between bottom half and bottom of the barrel. But if Jake Meyers is no better in 2025 than he was in 2024, that is not a guy you want as an everyday center fielder. He'll be there going in because of lack of alternatives and Jacob Melton not making any sort of push, and because he's the one real high caliber defensive outfielder at his position there in center field. But that, oh, Jake Meyers in center field as a big leaguer, we're good. No, they're not.
We know how much the Astros value defense. I mean, how much has Dana Brown talked about Christian Walker? His defense even was more exciting than the 30 home run potential. And you hear those type of things. And their interest in Arenado, they love defense. Remember the Miles Straw days in center field. You know, Daikin Park has a huge center field. So I understand why they want somebody that can really run and, you know, cover the gaps. And I thought it was interesting. Dave Clark mentioned one of the big benefits of Jake Meyers is that he's left-handed. So he catches the ball with his right hand, which means it's in that left field gap where they're going to be putting Altuve out there. So they think that gives him an even bigger edge to be able to track down balls in that gap. He also mentioned that Yordan might be out there a couple times a week in putting Altuve in the DH spot to get him a little more rest, which is kind of contrary to what we're hearing from Joe Espada about Yordan basically being a full-time DH. But clearly this is something they are talking about, and that they're even just talking about what hand Meyers throws with, giving him the edge in the outfield and him helping Altuve. That just tells you how much they prioritize defense.
One last reminder, if you're watching on YouTube and you haven't yet, be sure to click like on the video. And if you listen on podcast apps like Apple or Spotify, please consider giving us a 5-star rating. Our next episode will drop on Monday. Make sure you're subscribed to this channel, Sports Map Houston, our other channel, Sports Map Texans. We drop bonus episodes as news breaks. Thanks for listening. For Charlie and Josh, I'm Brandon saying so long. And until next time, go Stros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.